The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The way the teachings of mindfulness are often given, the emphasis is on being present for what's happening, to notice what's happening, some aspect of the present moment to see what's happening, what's present. And in giving the instruction that way, it tends to emphasize, perhaps overemphasize, what's happening as opposed to what's not happening. But sometimes the practice, it's useful in practice in our lives to notice what's not happening as well as what's happening. And so and if you look at the instructions the Buddha gave for mindfulness practice, it included recognizing that certain some things when they're present, but also noticing when they're not present. There's a learning and value in noticing the absence of some things. I'll say in a few moments what the Buddha said about this, but I'll say some words first. And we can be focused a lot on our concerns. Often people are concerned minds concerned about something, and so something is finished and we're on to the next concern, and we kind of leave what happened behind. And but sometimes by noticing that something's no longer present, we can notice what we're like when it's absent. We can notice how we've shifted and what shifted and what had to shift. And this is particularly true not so much with the external world, but with the inner world. When we have certain ways of being, certain emotions, certain tendencies. Mindfulness practitioners will spend a lot of time sometimes being very present and for their emotion, what's happening, and trying to understand and be present for it. But when it's gone, and they just go on to the next thing. But there's information to be had from noticing that something's no longer there. So in the teachings that the Buddha gave on mindfulness, he said, notice the five hindrances and notice when they're not present. So notice when there's strong desire, and then when that desire has gone away, take some time recognizing what that's like to have an absence. If there's strong ill will, aversion or anger, certainly notice what that's like, but then notice what it's like when it's not there, when it's past. And same thing for the other five hindrances, and same thing for sloth and torpor, for restlessness and regret, and for doubt. And so what it does, if you notice when it's not there, it does a number of things. One is you can explore and feel in your body, in your mind, what is now absent and what is now present now that the hindrance is gone. So you might feel like if you're consumed with anger, and anger is a common phenomenon for your life, it might by accident go away one day. It's not there. But then you spend some time getting to know what that absence is like, and you can kind of feel, oh, I'm not so contracted, I'm not tight, I'm not spinning my thoughts so much. And you recognize what is different when you're not angry as opposed to when you're angry. And so there's learning there. Oh, so that's what's different. That's how it's different. And then next time you're angry, you have a comparison, not to judge yourself by, but now it stands out in highlight, maybe in a stronger way than you noticed before, what it was like for you to be angry. That's, oh, yeah, now I see how contracted I am when I'm angry. I didn't see that before because I was so caught up in my anger. But now because I can see what it's like to be not contracted, I can see the contraction. So to take time to appreciate or acknowledge or recognize what it's like when we're not troubled by something anymore is a valuable part of the practice. And sooner or later, you're not going to be troubled by something, because generally things pass away with time. I mean, even if you get distracted, it's passed temporarily. And then to notice, what's this like now? What is this like now? And the more you can become aware of this difference, a few other benefits come as well. One is the absence of a troubling state. If that feels pleasant and enjoyable in some way, feels satisfying or feels nice, if that's recognized what that's like, then it can be a little bit more appealing to let go of the things you're troubled by or things you're attached by. You have some place to go. Letting go isn't just letting go into nothing. It's letting go into something that feels nice. And you've recognized, oh, it feels good not to be so contracted. And if I let go of my contraction, I can go into that nice feeling of being uncontracted. There's something attractive there. And the mind, I think, will tend to go where it's more interesting, where it's what feels nice. So anyway, so it encourages the process of letting go and not being so caught by the things we're caught by. The other is that the more we get used to this, the greater the highlight, the greater the contrast exists for us between states of suffering and states free of suffering, and become increasingly sensitive to that difference rather than all kind of jumbled together. And that increasing contrast shows us that they might begin showing us the place in between the two where we have a choice. Where we're interacting, where we're holding, where we're attached to, what our concerns are, that might be harder to see if we're just kind of lost in our suffering. But by seeing the contrast, seeing that there is a difference, a different way of being, sometimes you can see what you're contributing, what you're doing, what you're holding on to, and so it's easier to let go. Also, the greater the contrast, some people will find the less interesting it is to suffer. And some people are really interested in their suffering. Some people are fascinated by it. Not only are some people fascinated by it, but not any of you, I'm sure, but there are a few people who find it very strategic to suffer. And part of the reason they really get into their suffering is that it's their way of controlling the world. And I've met people who are clearly trying to take control of other people by being really good at their suffering, being victims of suffering, and the world has to accommodate them and organize around them because everything's so hard for them. And so then I lost track of what I was talking about. I just kind of went down a certain direction and see if I can go back. So the contrast is useful, is helpful. The other thing that's helpful in noticing the absence of things, sometimes of positive states as well, you might be suffering or you might be kind of neutral, something like that. And then you can ask yourself, what's absent now? Yesterday I was feeling really good. This morning I was so-and-so. And that good feeling I had, that good way of being, is no longer here now. That's interesting. So that absence of that is, now what happened? What's happening? That's no longer there. I was confident this morning, and now the confidence is gone. Let me take a little moment to look back and reflect on this, to understand better what happened there, as opposed to just like, maybe not even recognizing that lack of that no more confidence, but simply noticing now I'm upset, and now I'm supposed to be present for what is. I'll be upset. I'll be present for upsetness. That's certainly valuable. But it might also be valuable to recognize that there's been a shift in the course of the morning. I was confident in the morning, and now I'm not. And what's that about? What does it feel like not to be confident? What is going on for me that the confidence is no longer there? To explore it, get to know it, and that might be valuable. So the idea of the absence of something being an important area of mindfulness, I think not an equal time as what you're present for, the things that are present. I think that's generally the place we bring our attention to, what's actually here. But from time to time, it's useful to take some time to notice what is absent. And sometimes by noticing what is absent, it might highlight something that's present that you're overlooking. So you notice, maybe you're kind of caught up in, doing your tasks for the day after you leave here, and the confidence you had in the morning is no longer here. And so you could just focus on what it's like to be caught up in your task. Or if you notice you no longer have the confidence, you can ask, well, what is going on here now that I don't feel so confident? And then you might notice that you're actually feeling kind of discouraged, that there's so many daily life tasks you always have to do. And so then you notice the discouragement in the way you hadn't before. And maybe it was a very mild, small thing, but maybe still significant. So okay, from time to time, especially if something's been going on for a while, a recurrent theme or some strong state of way of being has been going on, some strong emotion for a while. Once it's gone, don't just rush off to the next thing, but take a little bit of time, give yourself time to recognize the absence of that state, whether it's been a pleasant state or unpleasant state. Once it's gone, take some time to recognize what it's like that it's no longer there, and what you can learn from the contrast, what you can learn from the absence, and what else might be useful to pay attention to in the present moment now that that is no longer there, whatever that might be. So paying attention to the absence of things. So from time to time, because if all you did was pay attention to the absence of things, there's a lot to pay attention to. So just just mostly the things that have passed, were that way and now they're no longer here. So hopefully that makes some sense. And so I guess it's time for our temple cleaning.